Then the federal government had a relocation program that went into effect in the 50s.
Right.
And the government then seemed to want to break up these tribal communities.
Right. In the post-World War II era, the federal government thought that they should terminate any federal relationship they had with tribes. And they wanted to terminate their federal responsibility to the tribal governments and also abrogate the treaties and just have people go out and become part of the mainstream. So there was that sort of national mentality. And as part of that whole overall strategy of what we call the termination era, this policy of relocating Native people came into being. What they did was administered by the Department of Interior through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and most of the people that were affected by relocation were half Cherokee or more. What the federal government would do to entice people to participate in the relocation program was promise them a better life for the children, an education, a job for the adults. So it was called the Relocation and Employment Training Program. They would relocate people from places like our community and rural Navajo Nation and other places like that to Chicago or Los Angeles or Denver or Phoenix or San Francisco, places like that. Our better life, our first night in San Francisco was at an old hotel in San Francisco in the Tenderloin District, which is the red light district of San Francisco. If you try to think of getting on a train in rural Adair County in the late 1950s, it was like landing in Mars. And my mom, who's not Cherokee, was still a very rural person. And so the whole thing was as bewildering to her as it was to the children or the other families that participated in the program. But the better life for my family ended up with my father and my older brother getting a backbreaking job at a rope factory. And our family eventually ended up in a very rough housing project called Hunter's Point in San Francisco. And so the better life that a lot of people were promised didn't turn out that way at all. It was a misguided federal policy.
You were 10 years old, I believe.
Right, mm-hmm, right.
What sort of education did you have up until 10 years old?
I was in the fifth grade. I went to Rocky Mountain School. I don't know how many kids there were there, less than 50, I'm sure. School also didn't have any plumbing, so we used outhouses for the bathrooms, and everybody knew everybody. And to go from that kind of community to San Francisco was pretty amazing. And the only place I'd ever been was to the Muskogee State Fair on a school field trip. That was it.
Why did you go to California when you referenced earlier others went to Chicago and other places?
So well, my mom's mom was sort of a sturdy, adventurous woman, and she had lived in Adair County and went to California, settled in California. So my mother's mother lived about 80 miles from San Francisco, and that was the main reason we chose San Francisco. It was closer to San Francisco than Los Angeles.
What if your family said, no, we don't want to go? What would happen to you then?
I think our lives would have just played themselves out, as many other Cherokee families have. Here, we would have continued to farm. There were a lot of children, so there were a lot of children to work. Some would have gone to school, some wouldn't have. Life would have been very different for us, I think.
But you could have stayed.
We could have stayed. Mm-hmm. You had a choice. You weren't forced to go. It was more a matter of guilt-tripping parents, and, you know, they would come out to our house, and there were all these children, and besides our farm stuff, my dad and my older brother would go off to Colorado to cut broom corn as a way of getting cash to help buy our school stuff. So you're telling them, no, you can have a nice house, your kids can have an education, and that sort of thing. So while they weren't forced to go, all the families we met had certainly been painted a dream of a better life for the children.
Do you remember the day you left that day?
I do.
In the morning? Or how?
I remember, for one thing, I think it's important to know that we couldn't conceptualize San Francisco or even California. We had no basis for thinking about it. There was no kind of orientation program or anything like that. So we couldn't think, oh, well, we're going to California, because we didn't know how to think about it. All we knew was that we were going and we weren't coming back. It was a sad day. Very sad day, as we got in the car and went to Stillwell, looking at everything, past the school, and nobody wanted to stop. They just wanted to get to the train station. And so at that time, we had passenger trains that came into Stillwell, and I remember I don't know why I remember this, but we had chili at the Stillwell Cafe before getting on the train. And then the train ride was something we'd never done before, and kind of a quiet time. We didn't know completely what was going on, but we knew that it was a huge change from what we'd known.
So the land you left, did that still remain in your name? I mean, you talk about it today, but you left the land.
We left the land, and what's really interesting is that we always had very little money. And then when my father became ill, my parents had a lot of financial pressure, and he would not sell the land. He had offers from our neighbors here in Oklahoma to sell the land, and he wouldn't sell it. He kept it in case we wanted, which we all appreciate very much. So we still have the 160 acres that my grandfather was allotted. My cousins have 60, and we have 100. Of course, it's all together.
Who maintained the land when your family went to California?
No one. Someone lived in the house, and it burned down. When we came home to stay, it had all grown up. My people were using it as a great hunting place, so there were hunters riding around that we had to get rid of and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.